is Betty Turnell speaking for the Decatur Public Library. Our guest today is Mr. Hugh Baker. The narrator is Mr. Baker, and the interviewer is Betty Turnell. This recording is being made at the request of the Decatur Public Library. We're recording at the library on June 28, 1985. Well, Mr. Baker, I believe you've lived in Decatur all your life, haven't you?
I was born and raised in Decatur. I lived in Chattanooga, Tennessee for 12 years. But
How old were you when you were in Chattanooga? I mean, you don't have to give us your age, but your time.
I was in Chattanooga from 1933 to 1945. Uh-huh. I was with the Mueller Company in Chattanooga, and then was transferred back to Decatur with the Mueller Company.
Really, you've been a native Decatur resident.
That's right. Went to all through school, born here, and went through schools here.
Right. Where did your family live?
Well, my family moved to Decatur in about 1890 from Iowa. That was my mother and father and two brothers. And they moved and located on a farm south of what was then the Sangamon River, long before Lake Decatur was built. Their farm was located in the area which is now that South Town Shopping Center, I believe they call it. It included that shopping center and a part of the South Shores subdivision. Specifically, their farm was from Franklin, the old Franklin Street Road on the east to the railroad on the west, Southside Drive on the north, and what is now Imboden Drive on the south.
And now, there were two. That was all country then.
Oh, yes, that was all farmland. Dad's farmhouse was just about where the True Value hardware store is now. Actually, there were two houses, Dad's house, and then he had a smaller house for the hired help.
Well, we've had some remarkable changes since that time, since your family lived there.
Yes, one of the first changes in that general area was associated with the Mueller Company. They had a plan to develop a city, their own Mueller City, south of the Sangamon River. And they bought up all of the land along the river from what was then called the St. Louis Bridge Road. I guess that's 48 in it, the road to Taylorville, on the west, all the way to Sand Creek on the east. They owned all of that land except for two parcels. There was one area of 40 acres that they were never able to buy, and there was another place of about 2 acres that they were not able to buy. But Dad's farm then became a part of that. He sold it to the Mueller Company as a part of that general purchase of that entire area. However, after he sold it, he continued to operate it for several years after he sold it. Now I'm digressing.
Well, that's all right. But did the Mueller Company want to set up a town in competition with Decatur?
Yes, they had envisioned a separate town, something like Kohler, Wisconsin, Hershey, Pennsylvania, and Mueller, Decatur.
A company town.
And I've seen the drawings on it. It was all laid out, but just didn't ever actually
materialize. What made them give up the idea?
I don't know. Part of it, well, of course, they did build one plant in that area. It was originally the Mueller Pottery plant. Later became Plant 3 was a munitions plant during the war. That was one concrete step toward the development. But another thing was a change in the way people lived. And automobiles had a lot to do with it. Public parks had a lot to do with it. The Mueller employees had plenty of opportunities for recreation and for using their own personal time. And there ceased to be the close-knit feeling of employees. And I think all of that contributed to the idea, the decision to abandon that Mueller.
And of course, the change in transportation, automobiles brought it much closer to Decatur than it would have been otherwise.
But continuing on that, there was all that farmland which Mueller owned, and incidentally it was a separate corporation, it was not the Mueller Company. Mm-hmm. I believe the name of it was the Mueller Land Improvement Trust.
Owned by the Mueller family?
Owned by the Mueller family, mm-hmm. Correct. By the Mueller family, but not by the Mueller Corporation. Mm-hmm. That's exactly the difference. After my father completely retired from the farm, he was then named farm manager for all of that area for the Mueller Land Improvement Trust, and that's one of the things that he did.
They may have felt that the land was more or at least as valuable for farming as it would have been otherwise.
Well, I don't know about that. I can't really think that they ever made much money of it. Much of it was poor land. Much of it was pasture land. It was rolling. For example, Dad's farm was a dairy farm. It wasn't a grain farm.
It wasn't the rich land that elsewhere in Macon County.
No, it was pasture land. There was only a part of it that was really good productive farmland.
Mm-hmm.
And that productive part, Dad would raise corn, grain, but it was primarily, well, entirely to feed the cattle for his dairy. It wasn't to sell on the open market as grain farmers do now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is a fascinating story. And we want to hear more about it. But right now, let's go back to your early childhood, your family, brothers and sisters, and so on.
Okay, I think I said that they moved from Iowa, mother, father, two brothers, in roughly 1890. Not too long after that, well, 1895 to be exact, my two brothers died. They had diphtheria, died 2 hours apart. Mm-hmm. They had the first antitoxin that was ever given in the state of Illinois. It was of no value because it was given way too late.
How old were your brothers?
4 and 6.
Oh.
An interesting part about that is that at that time, children funerals all had a separate children hearse, of course, horse-drawn. And the undertaker had difficulty finding two children's hearses because they just hadn't had to cope with a funeral with two children at the same time. But they finally located a second child's hearse, and the funeral procession, so I'm told, created some interest in the town because of seeing two children's hearses in the procession instead of the usual one.
Now, hearses were quite elaborate at that time, weren't they? Horse-drawn, of course.
I have seen some old ones, one or two, and the ones I have seen were. In fact, some of them even had glass on the sides with curtains drawn. course, I didn't see these. This was before I was born. But I have seen one or two of that period.
Well, what a tragic time for your parents, and what a trauma they must have gone through. And now you say they died of diphtheria?
Yes.
And that tells us something about childhood diseases, too, at that time, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
So, of course, they've been, and you said they were trying to develop the vaccine. But later, of course, they were able to control that particular, well, many childhood diseases much better.
Yes. They, right.
Well, now, you were, were there other children in between these brothers and yourself? You
no.
were the next child.
I was the next one, came along way late.
Uh-huh.
In fact, it was 16 years after they died.
Oh.
So it was way late. By that time, my parents had left the farm entirely. They still operate it. They moved to Decatur in town. Dad still operated the farm, but he had help that lived on the farm. And he would drive out to the farm, horse and buggy, each day that the weather would permit, and would supervise. Actually, he participated just as a farmer and then drive back to town in the evening.
Did he ever take you out there?
Well, this later on, yes, when many were, times.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I was out there many times. In fact, summer times I'd go out and spend two weeks there.
Mm-hmm.
Winter times, sometimes go out and spend a weekend with the family that yeah. then lived and
operated.
Did you
ever do any chores on the farm?
Yes,
what
I think
were your
I did.
Jobs?
I think I did most everything. I milked lots of cows
mm-hmm.
and helped in the fields some. One of my regular jobs, more or less regular, was in the fall. Farmers then would cut the corn into silage or ensilage, cut up into small pieces and blow it up into a silo. And as that was blown into the silo, it had to be tamped down to get the air out of it. So someone inside the silo just kept walking around in circles, and that was one of my jobs. I guess because I had big feet. That's
what
it took.
Rather dangerous?
No, it was no danger involved. It was well ventilated. And the corn that was blown into it was under control in that it was blown in with and directed by a pipe.
Uh-huh.
And there was another man in the silo that directed the pipe. And he would be sure to keep it away from the walkers. There usually were two people just walking in the silo.
Uh-huh. Well, that is amazing. Well, then, you didn't decide to become a farmer, though.
No. In fact, Dad got completely out of the dairy business, and I don't know when. I would have to guess about 19... Well, I just can't put a figure on it. I remember being at the auction when he sold all of the equipment and all of the cows, because by that time I had been given two cows, and I remember my two cows being sold in the auction.
Was that a sad time for your family?
No.
Auction?
No.
You had made up your mind that you were going to get out of the
They
business.
Had to. I think they were very definitely relieved to be completely free of it.
Was your father of retirement age then?
Yes. Yeah. He didn't retire, though. Because then he was in a form of contracting business and real estate business. He built homes and sold them. He bought homes and rented them and resold them. Started out, I guess, kind of a hobby, and then developed it into a fairly decent small business.
I wanted to ask you, did you have any other brothers or sisters after you were born?
No.
So you were really an only child.
That's right. I grew up as an only child.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Grew up as an only child and late in my parents' life.
Mm-hmm. Where did you go to school?
Went to grade school at Murray W. French. Went to junior high at Roosevelt and senior high at Decatur High School.
So you came up through the Decatur Public School.
Right.
And your career was, well, why don't you tell us about your own career?
Well, after graduating from high school in Decatur, I went to the University of Michigan. Graduated from Michigan in 1933. My official academic degree is in marine engineering and naval architecture. But if you think of the time that I graduated, the year 33, that was right in the height of the Depression.
Death of the Depression.
And the shipyards, the shipping industry was doing absolutely nothing. It's kind of interesting that in my entire class, engineering class from Michigan, there was only one person in that class that had a job when we graduated. The rest of us were a group of well-educated, unemployed people.
It is rather interesting that you chose marine architecture when you came from the Middle West. Did you have a love for water?
Yes, I did, and it was a very sought after profession at the time that I started. There were only two schools in the United States that taught marine engineering, Michigan being one of them. So their graduates were much in demand. But that situation certainly changed during my 4 years school.
Lake Decatur had been built by that time, had it? Wasn't it in the 20s?
Yes.
Did that make any difference in your plans? You weren't influenced
no.
by the water of the lake.
No. Mm-hmm. No. But since I didn't get into marine engineering or naval architecture at all, I was anxious to do anything and would gladly do anything. My first job, I guess, other than odd jobs, was with the Mueller Company in the engineering department and their plant at Chattanooga. They bought the Columbian Ironworks in about November of 1933. I got a job then starting January 1, 1934 at the Chattanooga plant. And that was mechanical engineering, which was not too different from the marine engineering. Marine engineering was a good base for it. So I was very comfortable in mechanical engineering with Mueller Company.
And how long were you in Chattanooga?
12 years.
12 years. Did you enjoy that time?
Very, very much. I liked Chattanooga very much. I liked the people, area, climate. I married in Chattanooga. Our two children were born in Chattanooga. My wife's family, of course, still has connections in Chattanooga.
But you decided that your future was really in Decatur.
No, I didn't decide. Mueller Company did. I was up here on a business trip. I periodically came to Decatur, and the other Mueller plants. I traveled to the other plants from Chattanooga, operating out of Chattanooga. Well, I was in Decatur on one of these trips, and Everett Mueller just casually said, "We'd like to have you in, move to Decatur. When could you do it?" And I said, "Well, I don't want to do it, but I can do it most any time. He said, how about next Monday? So next Monday I was in Decatur, in the Decatur office instead of Chattanooga. It took quite a while to locate the, to relocate the family.
How did your wife take that news?
Well, I think she had mixed feelings. First place, she'd never been north in her life, except for brief visits, but she'd never spent any time in the north. She recognized she'd be leaving her family, mother, father, two sisters, all of the friends that she had developed, and going into a strange, unknown land, climate,
among Yankees.
Yeah. The surprising thing is that she fell in love with Decatur the minute she hit here.
Okay.
She has liked it right from the start. Fortunately, she met some awfully nice people, and they developed into good, long-lasting friends. And she very quickly assumed the feeling that Decatur was her home.
And your children, too.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they were real young, real young.
So they actually grew up here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, Mr. Baker, let's go back to the firm again for a moment. And you said your father was in the dairy business. There have been many changes in that business, haven't there? Can you tell us about some of them?
Yes, probably. Well, one of the changes right at the start was the change from all hand milking, which it was all during the time that Dad had at the dairy, to mechanical milking. But there was also a big change in the distribution of the milk. Milk at that time was distributed directly from the dairy to the consumer, the customer. And even before cartons or even bottles, milk was delivered in the bulk, even to consumers, in the delivery wagon. Dad or whoever was delivering milk had small containers which they would take to usually the front porch of the consumer, and there would be usually a lard can with a coin under it. So the procedure would be to pour in a certain quantity of milk into the lard can and pick up the nickel or the dime that was there. Mm-hmm. And that's the way all the milk was delivered at that time. The consumer had to furnish his own container.
Well, was the milk pasteurized?
No, this was all raw milk. And one of the secrets on trying to keep raw milk free of bacteria was to keep it cold. And one of Dad's procedures was to rush milk the minute it was, very shortly after it was milked. He had runners that would run it from the dairy barn to his creamery, which is all roughly 200, 300 feet away, and get it cool just as quickly as possible. He wouldn't even wait for a large can of milk to be accumulated in the milking barn.
Now, he cooled it by ice?
By ice.
How'd he get his ice?
Okay. He had a real large ice house, and much of the ice he cut, or men, cut from the Sangamon River when it was available, but it wasn't dependable. But whenever he could, he'd get ice from the Sangamon River, big ice house. It had a slope, we'd call it a conveyor, I guess now. It would take the ice up to the top and then also would shoot it back down again when it was used. Packed in sawdust. There was a sawdust house right next to the ice house. And as the ice was put in, starting of course at the bottom, was packed with sawdust all around it and built up layer after layer to the top and would start using it from the top. And as it was used, the sawdust would then be shoveled into the adjacent sawdust house right next to it for use again next winter. And when that wasn't sufficient, there'd be a trip into the old polar ice plant to get a whole load, get a full wagon load of ice. That was a full afternoon's job for someone to go in and get a wagon load of ice there, what as needed in the afternoon.
Going back to the delivery of the milk, when the customer provided his own container, wasn't that wasn't very sanitary, was it?
It was as sanitary as they made it. That was their responsibility to provide a sanitary receptacle for them, for the milk as it was delivered. Most of Dad's customers were good,
clean people.
Clean people, right. Mm-hmm.
But you could visualize problems.
That's right. There was lots of opportunity for them.
When did pasteurization and the control of the delivery come in? About what time, do you know?
I don't know about pasteurization, but one of the big steps that Dad was involved in was delivering milk in bottles instead of in the bulk. Then the delivery wagon would be filled with cases mm-hmm. of bottled milk and would deliver 1, 2, 4, 6 bottles of milk instead of in the bulk. And there again, that went through change because originally each bottle was filled by hand and then capped, and then Dad finally got a bottling machine that filled them with this machine.
Now, when the customer would get the bottle of milk, what would happen to the bottle?
There had to be a bottle. Empty bottle in exchange.
He would put his empty bottle out.
Put his empty bottle out, and it would only give the number of milk equal to the empty bottles that they had. If they had 3 empty bottles out, they got 3 bottles of milk.
And according to the money, too.
Well, by that time, most of the milk was then handled by tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Each customer would buy a sheet or a package of tickets, and they'd leave the tickets.
Mm-hmm. So that would take care of that.
Yeah.
Did your father have to sterilize the bottles then when he...
Yes, he had a steam outfit mm-hmm. that was just specially for sterilizing.
So that helped the problem a good deal, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk a minute about delivery. Did your father have his own delivery men?
Oh, yes. Everything.
And wagons?
Was yes. Yeah.
Can you tell us something about that?
Well, I don't know of anything particularly interesting. It was just common practice. They delivery wagon, let's take one, the delivery wagon would be loaded directly from his own creamery and ready to roll as soon as the delivery man had breakfast. So he'd have breakfast, and by the time he was finished with breakfast, the delivery wagon was all hitched up, was loaded, was packed with ice, and he was ready to head out.
All right, now let's talk about other products. Did your father make other products such as cottage cheese? Some people call that smear case.
No, only butter cheese that was made was just for the family use only.
Oh, you didn't make other kinds of cheese?
No, but did furnish cream,
mm-hmm.
milk uh-huh. and cream.
Uh-huh. And skim milk, if people wanted it.
No, I don't remember any skim milk being furnished mm-hmm. to consumers. The skim milk was either fed to the hogs and the pigs, and Dad was not in that business, but he kept some just mm-hmm. for his own use. Or the skim milk, at times, if there was an oversupply of it, was taken in and sold to one of the commercial mm-hmm. creameries like Benson.
Mm-hmm. You didn't sell butter, but you made it for your own use.
That's right. Didn't ever sell butter that I can recall at all. Just made it for my own use.
Well, there are many advantages to living on a farm, aren't there? Fresh butter and your own products.
Yes, but at that time it was an awful lot of work.
Hard work,
and particularly dairy farming.
So you can see why your father wasn't too sad about giving up the business.
No,
it was really hard.
He was pretty much.
He had long hours.
Oh, he had awfully long hours. Dad had an awfully large dairy. He had the largest dairy in central Illinois. He regularly milked about 60 cows, got up to a high of 80 cows, and when you think of milking that many cows by hand, excuse the pun, but it takes a lot of hands
to milk
that many cows. And you have to do it within a time period.
About what time would he have to get up, and how long was his day, and so on?
Oh, I think they got up about 4 o'clock and started milking almost immediately. It seemed like they were finished with most of the milking by 7. And then again in the evening, it went from about 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Mr. Baker, during that time, I believe World War I broke out, and we were in the throes of the First World War. Your father surely was influenced or had some problems connected with the conditions during that time.
Yes. He, of course, was a great supporter of Liberty Bonds and that type of thing, was active in those drives, but his war effort, probably the major part, was the fact that during that time there was an epidemic in Decatur, not a flu epidemic, it was an epidemic of sickness in small babies and small children, young children. They thought that milk was the cause. The men that were there, what would now be called the city council, pressured Dad to become a city milk inspector and see if he could find the cause, if there was one, in the area of the milk causing this sickness in the babies and children. He resisted it for a while, but finally felt that he had to do it as a part of his effort toward World War I. He first of all inspected every city, every dairy that delivered milk to the city of Decatur, and he found some things and helped the farmers' improvement. There was no litigation or anything of that time. It was merely Dad always carried working clothes with him, and he'd just slip on his working clothes and pitch in and help the dairyman solve the problem, whatever it was. Sometimes I mentioned cooling earlier, sometimes they just didn't get the milk cooled quickly enough, and there were some sanitary conditions that had to be cleaned up. Well, he started there. By that time, milk was also being sold through grocery stores. And he discovered that some milk was staying on the shelves in grocery stores too long, that is, in the coolers. And in some cases, not properly cooled. So he investigated all facets of the production and the distribution of milk. And this epidemic cleared up, and I don't know that the milk or his efforts had a single thing to do with it, but it might have just been time that it worked itself out. But he spent an awful lot of time. He was up early in the morning and late at night, and that led to he built a small laboratory in our home, and he'd bring in samples of milk and test them in his laboratory. And he did that because it took so long to, if you sent the milk to a regular laboratory, to get the results mm-hmm. back. By that time, more problems existed. So this way he could, any sample he took in the day, he'd work that night before he went to bed and would have the answer by the following morning. That continued all through World War I. At the end of World War I, he said, now look, the war's over, let's call this thing quits. They talked him into staying with it, and he said he would as a half-time job. So he spent half-time as milk inspector after World War I, and then got back to his other interests of building homes, and he still had the farm. He was more managing, more actively managing the dairy, his own dairy then.
Well, we've talked about your father quite a bit, but what about your mother? She must have been very, very busy too.
Yes. Basically, mother was a school teacher in Iowa. She didn't ever pursue that after they moved to Decatur. She was strictly a farm dairyman's wife, and did the chores, helped around the farm, whatever, wherever she could, as the women all did in those days. It wasn't unusual. She helped any way she could, and still cooked the meals and take care of the house.
She got up at 4 o'clock when your father...
She'd be up. She'd have the same hours.
And fix breakfast. Now, did your hired people eat at your house?
Sometimes they did and sometimes they didn't. I mentioned, I think earlier, that Dad had a second tenant's house. Well, most of the people lived in that, and that was their own family house, and they'd go back there to eat. At times, that family also fed the other hired people. But there were times, I can remember, that there were times when they hired, some of the hired people ate at Dad's farmhouse too.
Because she didn't have to fix harvest dinners for dairy, did she? Was there a time when you had big workforce there that had to be the harvest dinner?
Yes, in the fall, when they'd harvest the corn and fill the silos, there'd be a big crew, and I remember that they'd set up tables outside for that gang to eat. But that was usually only one meal, just the noon meal for that floating help. That wasn't the regular help. That
but
was some
big,
extra
big job
help
for your mother and the other women around, I imagine. Mm-hmm.
Well,
we can look back on those times and think that life on a farm has become much, much easier. Electricity must have made a big change.
It made a big difference.
Do you remember when the farm first got electricity? Well, did it have electricity in the beginning?
Oh, no.
Well,
no.
Can you tell us something about that?
Well, it had kerosene lamps and lanterns. Dad did put in a carbide lighting system in the house, and I believe it was in the also piped to the creamery. Yeah, it wasn't, I don't recall it in the actual dairy barns, but I believe it was in the creamery and the house, and that was a carbide gas lighting system.
And then he finally got electricity.
Mm-hmm.
About what time was that?
I don't
know. You remember?
No.
Uh-huh. Mm. But it made a tremendous difference to farm life.
Yes.
Well, as you look back on that shopping center there, that area, it must bring back memories to you.
Mm. I don't know that I was that close to it.
Uh-huh.
I was too young when Dad was real active. And I was only partially involved with it. A couple of part of the time during the summer, sometimes on weekends, maybe a few days at vacations, but I didn't ever spend, I've spent nights there, but I didn't ever spend, never spent more than a week
at least
at a time out there.
We realize what tremendous changes have come about. Now, how long did you work for the Mueller Company?
43 years.
And then you retired from that.
Yes.
Have you enjoyed your retirement?
Very much. Thoroughly enjoyed.
How do you spend your time?
Well, when I first retired, I was very, very busy in civic activities. When I first retired, I was on 9 civic boards, mm-hmm. and I hadn't done my duty on those boards while I was with Mueller Company. So I decided to make up for that, and for the first couple of years after retirement, I was awfully busy.
In what areas?
I expect primarily in health. I was president of the Decatur Mental Health Center. I was on some alcoholism committees. I was on the Salvation Army Board, and I'm still on the Salvation Army Board. I've gotten out of most of the organizations now.
And do you have any hobbies?
I expect the biggest hobby is the things around home. I enjoy taking care of the yard, maintenance work for the home, and probably that's the biggest hobby. I try to play a little golf, but
and for your family, of course.
Yes.
Well, Mr. Baker, it's been a real pleasure to hear your reminiscences. You've given us a great insight into life that wasn't so very long ago, but very, very different. And we certainly appreciate it. And thank you very much.
Well, I hope I haven't rambled too much. That's my main concern.
Any ramblings have been very enjoyable. So thank you.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to the reminiscences of Mr. Hugh Baker, and this is Betty Turnell for the Decatur Public Library. And this is Betty Turnell for the Decatur Public Library.